The Scottish FA Cup fourth round, Brecon City 0, Dundee United 1. Clydebank against Burnion as a late kickoff. Dundee 1, Meadowbank Thistle 1. Hamilton Academical 1, Motherwell 2.
Heart of Midlothian Matt. Against Celtic, late kickoff. How you doing? Pleasure to meet you. Oh, elbow to elbow. Oh. This is Sam, yeah.
We got in the broom wagon and headed east out of Edinburgh to Linlithgow, home of the West Lothian cycle circuit. There we met one of the driving forces behind the circuit's creation before setting off for stage 9 of the Tour de Cosse, the final one of this portion of the tour, which would take us a total of 55 kilometres via Falkirk, Stenhouse Muir and Stirling to Alloa, where we would watch Alloa Athletic take on Clyde in Scottish League Division 1.
OK, I'm Matt Ball. I'm a board member of Linlithgow Community Development Trust. I'm also a founding member of West Lothian Clarion. And the club started here about 12 years ago. And then 10 years ago, we set up a youth section. And we're coaching 120 kids on this site at the moment, once a week. As you came in, you might have seen some markings on the grass. So we coach on the grass, CX skills, road skills, mountain biking. And then the football club, who's also based here, wanted to get a 5G pitch. And to get the 5G pitch, we needed a multi-sport facility, because that's the best way to get funding to get these sort of things built. So they asked the athletics club and the cycling club to come in on that. So we drew up plans, which I've got here. This is probably the fourth iteration of the plans. But as it happened, the football club managed to get a big investment from Scottish Football. So they got the 4G pitch, which is just here, there. And so we thought, well, we really need a cycling facility. We want to make this a community hub, with the anchor being cycling, so we can get more people on bikes. That's what we want to do, is get more people cycling to appreciate the health benefits and the mental health benefits you get from riding a bike in the open air. So we came with this plan of having three core user groups, really. We've got sports cyclists, we've got active life cyclists, people who just want to ride the bikes, and we've got all ability cyclists. So, for instance, Ben Rawlings is an Olympian who, until recently, lived in Linlithgow. Yeah, he's a wheelchair athlete, and he's got to train on the open road. And he thinks if we get this facility here, you're going to get hand cyclists and all ability athletes coming here to train. So that's going to be fantastic. Can you imagine if we get a Paralympian gold medalist from our club? So that's what we want to do there. All ability cycling with active lives, you know, if you chat to people, they don't know where to start. I'll go and deliver a letter in the post office, and I'll chat to the lady in the post office. She's got an electric bike, she fell off, she's too scared to use it. I tell her about the cycle circuit, because that's ideal, you know. Completely traffic free, it's fenced off and fully lit, so all year round use. Beautiful smooth tarmac. And I see it as a sort of a pathway. So you start off at the cycle circuit, you get your confidence. Then just along here, that canal, the Sustrans route, that takes you from Edinburgh to Glasgow. At the end of that, about 2 miles down that road, which you might go on today, is you open up to some beautiful lanes of Falkirk, which you go out for a ride and you just don't see any cars. It's not like England where they're all over the place. Up here, there's not that many. It's just fantastic. So that's that. It's like a three-step pathway, and this is the start. We've partnered up now with Scottish Cycling, West Lothian Leisure, and West Lothian Council, who are tendering and delivering the project, and Sports Scotland. So it's a real partnership project now. And West Lothian Leisure, they want to run daytime sessions here. So instead of doing a spin class, you'd come and do a ride out here. They want to do lead rides from the cycle circuit. So you can see how over time a community is going to be built up for people to share knowledge, inspire each other, and just get on their bikes and enjoy life.
What sort of facilities similar to this are there in Scotland? Because where I live, within an hour or so's drive, I've got the Hillingdon Circuit, I've got the one at Hog Hill, which was a legacy of the Olympics, and I'm sure there's others that I can't think of off the top of my head, but we're fairly well blessed. So what's the picture like in Scotland as a whole?
Well, until about 3 years ago, there wasn't anything. We'd be using the airport down at Edinburgh, and that was just getting really expensive to hire out. So you've got a facility in Lochgelly, which is over in Fife, and that is the only facility in Scotland. We were going to be the first facility, but when you're dealing with a project like this, I didn't realise it was going to be like a 10-year project and take up so much time, but you get so many gates that you have to get through. So Lochgelly managed to come along and get theirs open to begin with. But there's this one, and there's a new one being built in Glasgow, and both our facility and the Glasgow facility are benefited from the World Championships in 2023 and the legacy funding that came about that through Sports Scotland. And we had a very big cash injection, and without that we wouldn't be in the situation we are in now.
I must say the Sustrans National Cycle Route has been an absolute revelation to me up here. We've really, even going crisscrossing around Glasgow and certainly coming across from Glasgow to Edinburgh, we've barely been on anything you would describe as a busy road. It strikes me that even in the urban areas, the bike could be, you know, a really integral part of people's, you know, travel solutions. Would say round Glasgow there's quite a lot of broken glass on some of the paths, but in general they're in really good nick. But this circuit itself, I mean, just describe to me exactly what it is that you're getting built.
Well, we're just at the entrance just over there where you come in, and it is a four loop circuit. So from a coaching point of view, you can coach four groups of 20 riders at the same time. We've got a landscaped area in the middle where you could do some grass track coaching or just simple basic skills with youngsters, so you could get quite conceivably 80 riders on this circuit in one go. We have, which is still on the plans, you can see it, is the cobbled section, which the podcast listeners donated money to and through the sale of the mugs, and that's still there. We have to get the circuit built, but I am determined to get that built, because come the Spring Classics, it's just going to be fantastic to incorporate it into a bike race, and everyone's going to love it. They're going to come from miles around to take part in a race, and that's going to have a lot of people either side of it. I'd like to get it sponsored by an organisation that would get their face on a lot of photographs on the circuit. And we've got this bit here that is a crucial bit of real estate, that triangle. We kept that in. And that's quite, this bit here costs quite a lot of money. There's a lot of tarmac there, but that there, you've got some really acute corners, so you can just drill riders around those corners, because the problem with a lot of these circuits are they're quite smooth corners, and if you're going to a cricket in a town centre, it's 90 degree corners. So these things are crucial to the future of cycling, really.
I mean, just looking at the plan on a 2D drawing, I can tell there you can coach all sorts of ages and abilities there. You could have nice gentle circuits round, or as you say, you could really drill some really tight discipline and coach some real skills. And you mentioned the cobble section there. Roughly how long is that cobble section?
That cobble section is probably going to be about 70 metres, I'd imagine, depending on how much money we can add to the circuit. But you know, it's not going to be like the Koppenberg, but it's going to be enough to give riders the feel of how you can ride it, and before they go out to Belgium.
Absolutely, and every lap, that's certainly enough, isn't it?
It's going to be about a minute 30 every lap, we'd imagine, if you're gunning it.
Right. So the full length of the circuit, its sort of longest extension would be,
it's like 1 kilometre.
Right.
1 kilometre. Excellent. We've had to go down from 6 metres to 5 metres. Just COVID was and lockdown was a. We were about to go and build it before lockdown, but it just took all the wind out of our sails, and then all the costs went up. So we've had to take practical measures to get this circuit built. So for instance, here around this area at the moment, we do the West Lothian Clarion run a cyclocross race, and it's a women only cyclocross race and a youth cyclocross race. And this year we integrated a beginners men's. So we do it around here, this bit, but we want to extend it onto the circuit, so you'll come round, there's a gate here, you'll come through this bit and then back out again, so we'll have a tarmac start and finish now. And you know, it'd be great to get a national series race up here. It would be lovely to come on, run up to the canal, come down here and then back onto there's so many things you can do with a small amount of space.
Yeah.
You know, you'll have a shot with a photographer down by the side here with it'd be like the World Championship photograph from in Italy a few years ago.
It's a fantastic concept, and well, we've been aware of it since, I can't remember what year it was now, but it was one of the first batches of Stacey Snyder's Cups. Now, it's no surprise to me that when Stacey was listening to the podcast, she decided Richard was the most cup-worthy of the three of us. I have no complaints with that. I did eventually get a cup, but Stacey sent Richard a cup and explained all about, you know, the work and the love that goes into making these handmade cups. I mean, she's an incredibly gifted ceramicist, and the cups are works of art, really. And Richard saw an opportunity there to offer something to podcast listeners that would be a real keepsake, a real memento, something really worth having. And rather than just kind of, you know, split the money, he suggested a charitable aspect as well, so that we could raise money for good causes, some of which are registered charities and some of which are just good causes that mean something to our listeners. And, well, the circuit was one of the first recipients of some money.
Richard was so supportive. I only met him three times, but he was so warm and generous. And just to hear the facility mentioned on such a big podcast like yours, it just, when there's quite low moments when you're on this project where you think it's never going to happen, and just getting that support really lifts your spirits and really drives you forward to try and get it finished.
Yeah, he's been a big supporter of Scottish cycling, obviously represented his country, and which was something that obviously we good-naturedly ribbed him about. He rode the Commonwealth Games for Scotland, the road race and the time trial back in 98, and supported the Braveheart Fund and was involved with the Braveheart, which again trying to find the next generation and support young riders in their goal to make it as a professional. But of course, what we all know from the model of British cycling is you need the base of the pyramid to be as wide as possible, and so it's facilities like this that really draw people in. If you can get children on bikes in a sort of semi-competitive, fun but safe environment as early as possible, and really get them hooked on the buzz of cycling, and then it becomes something that they carry forward for, you know, the rest of their lives, whether they have the talent to actually make it in the sport or not. That is something that I think a project like this really really helps. The more people that can be attracted, like I say, in a safe environment, but also the Cycling Academy really is as well trying to cast the net as wide as possible to try and find riders and develop riders that might be able to make it into the pro ranks. So I know that they're going to be based here as well, and because they're not from far away, are they?
Well, James McCallum and Peter Allen set up the Cycle Academy, which is a junior and under 23 cycling team, which would be the next step really after you've come through the ranks of a go ride club. James McCallum, he was a ex-British champion, ex-Commonwealth Games cyclist. He was the face of our crowdfunding campaign, so he was the face of our crowdfunding video, and he's had a lot of input into the design of the circuit from his experience of crit racing as a British crit champion. So he's come along with the project, as part of the project, and so for him to be able to get his riders on here and drill them and get them used to cycling and sprinting and boxing them in and getting them used to the dynamic of a sprint. And also, the thing, it's a completely flat circuit, but there's a little gentle wind today. But quite a lot of part of the year, there's quite a gust coming from Glasgow, from the west. So you could start getting echelon training and things like that going on, so that when the Cycling Academy go to Belgium, they know what to do when the echelons start in the races.
Well, you learn more racecraft in the wind than you do on the hills, I think, that's for sure.
Matt mentioned Jimmy McCallum and the Cycling Academy there, and while the West Lothian Cycle Circuit will be a fantastic facility for riders of all ages and abilities, enabling more youngsters to get into the sport, there are still some big dots to join between being a talented youngster and making it all the way up to the World Tour. The Cycling Academy aims to close those gaps and provide a pathway for the best junior and under 23 riders to make the leap from club cycling to international competition.
We've got this like real nice moment just now where you've got what we're trying to do. We've got the circuit, the location of the circuit, how close it is to Glasgow, Edinburgh, Stirling, all kind of like the main central belt cities, of which any of them you could drive an hour in any direction and find some beautiful roads. I mean, from here, Linlithgow, where I live, very handily next door to the circuit, if I could drive, I could drive 45 minutes and be in the beautiful gravel roads in the of Aberfoyle, or right over the Duke's Pass and the Shossock. So it's very, very accessible. And the fact that now we can create exactly what Pete was talking about there, a system which is out with the governing body and relying on that funding, we can just go on every Tuesday, we're going to have this on, and every Thursday, we're going to do a coach-led race. We're going to do on Sunday, we're going to do our crit race. And I think that the way in which our sport's going to have to evolve, especially on road, is that we have to more festival-based ideas. We see it down in the Borders with the Tweed Love movement. They basically run the whole of all the events down in the Borders, everything from gravel racing, mountain bike racing, to seven-hour mountain bike races, to Tour of the Borders, but there's none of that actual race part, which is where having the circuit, Linlithgow, where we're based, we've got the Bathgate Alps. There's over 2,000 metres of climbing you can do there. We've got great mountain bike trails. We've got a great gravel network. And I think just now it's an incredibly exciting time around about the middle, that central belt of Scotland for the future. And we're trying to basically capitalise on that as much as possible and have just create this hotbed of young cyclists who just want to tear it to bits. That's what I want to see. I just want to see young athletes going at it with each other and just pushing each other to be better versions of themselves. After all, the hard work and the fighting that Matt Ball and Fraser Faulkner have done as part of that community trust, it is unbelievable the amount of work they've done, and to see it now happening is like, it is, I can't tell you how surreal it is when you stand and see it. It's just, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, Matt Ball for the New Year's honours list, I think.
Oh, the guy, relentless. And I was speaking to him this morning and he was like, oh, I need to do this, I need to do that. I'm like, bloody hell, man. He's doing everything from like business planning all the way through to like the timetabling of what we're doing and then the launch day. And I'm like, dude, if you need any help with some of that, let us know, because you're just putting yourself far too thin. So, it's going to be amazing. I just still can't believe it's going to happen.
I guess it probably started off by the fact that Jimmy and I were involved in helping young Scottish riders develop through the club system.
This is Peter Ellen, the director of the Cycling Academy, who works alongside Jimmy.
Mainly the Edinburgh Road Club, which you'll have heard of probably. So I was a coach there for a while. My son was in it. And as the youngsters grew up through the club, some of them went in different directions, different ways. But it became pretty clear that their optionality around developing as road riders was quite poor. And Jimmy was involved in helping run that youth club. And when my son hit 16, 17, he was becoming a junior. And the options for what you could do next were almost nothing other than joining a club down south. There was one other club in Scotland at the time that had juniors and wasn't recruiting anyone. And so my background is in business and entrepreneurship, which is a word I've always struggled to spell. But I looked around and thought, actually, this is quite a big problem. When you go into pro cycling stats, you could see that the last domestically developed World Tour pro was Brian Smith. And in the interim, we had David Miller, who's a great cyclist, but actually probably learnt to ride a bike in Hong Kong, despite the fact he's Scottish. That was that to the point where we founded, there was a 27-year gap. And at the same time, there was 27 World Tour pros in the UK, mostly, well, nearly all from England, Wales and Isle of Man. And having been around the scene for a while, I knew a bit about where youth riders were going in with their cycling. And, you know, most of them were aiming for the British Cycling or Scottish Cycling Programme, which is mainly track-based, or mountain biking, which Scotland produces a lot of very good mountain bikers. The Scottish youth mountain biking team tends to beat the crap out of all the other parts of the UK. And so in the interim, in that gap was Jimmy, and probably Evan with the other sort of big names. And so we ended up deciding or discussing what we're going to do about this. It's a pretty tough problem to solve. And there's no particular apparent reason. People would say, like, it's the weather. They're like, no, it can't be the weather. Norway's got good cyclists. And, you know, it can be pretty shit weather in Denmark sometimes as well. It's about the same distance north. And so we went in and dug quite deep and found quite a few things. And Jimmy's obviously had his own journey through that system in cycling. We got together and we actually got Brian Smith to come and help us a little bit as well with our thoughts on it, and decided that we needed both a team and a program, because if we just put the guys in a team, they were going to end up with the same expectations and processes as the people in the last 27 years. And so since then, we've been gradually building this team and program. I think we're actually officially, in accounting terms, we're now in we're moving into our third year. We've finished 2 years. Our first year was pretty awful because we were in the middle of COVID. You're trying to keep young riders motivated and they're not even allowed to go out and ride together. But once we got out and rode together, it was pretty good. So we did something Zwift and all kinds of other stuff to keep the guys, you know, because you know, if you lose them at that age, they're gone, you know. But since then, like, we've just completed our first full year. We won 4 Scottish championships with 3 riders. We competed at Aimbozhe Valromi in Rhône Alpes, which is effectively the under 19 Tour de France. We did pretty well there, actually. We had riders up in lead groups and competing hard. That was our first ever UCI races. And then we were back in Belgium in September for the Kaiser Juniors, which was a stage race that includes Oude Quermont and Paterberg in pretty crazy conditions, 40 mile an hour driving, rain and wind, which actually suited us quite well. And we did pretty good in that. We got a 5th and a 24th, I think it was, and we're all a bunch of riders all 30 seconds off the win. So we feel like we're making progress, but we really are. We're still unpicking the problem of why Scotland's not producing these riders and starting to put bits and pieces in place. We've just, last weekend, we just did our kind of first team camp of the year. I think we're feeling quite optimistic now because we feel right. Okay, we've proven we've got the best team in Scotland. We've proven we can compete in all the British national races with, you know, all the best junior teams that are better established. So now we need to take the next level up and work out how to do that. And I think, yeah, we see it as a, I think when we started this, we thought it'll probably take us 7 years to really get to where we should be, so that we've got Scottish riders on a par with the riders in England and Wales. And there's real hot spots in England and Wales, obviously Yorkshire and South Wales are hot spots for cyclists. And happily as well, Sean Flynn, one of the Edinburgh Road Club lads, got signed to DSM the other day. So he's broken the duck for the, well, it must be 28 years now since somebody came through the Scottish club system. So that's good. And we know Sean well from the kind of youth coaching days. He's a pretty exceptional individual. So a great role model for our young riders.
It's not just creating great bike riders, it's creating really robust and confident individuals who are very, very aware of what they're able to do and not scared to adventure off of the kind of the normal line and the normal pathways that we've got. Unfortunately, we've been so successful with the British cycling point of view and the Team Sky and the GB track programme that the unfortunate part of that is people get brainwashed by it, and you're either good enough to be on Sky or you're an Olympic champion or you're rubbish and you get lost in sport. So there has to be other avenues. And the whole idea of the Cycling Academy originally in its essence was that I wanted to give anyone who wanted to really further themselves in sport of cycling, they can have access to coaching, access to team, access to everything that you would need without having to be in that small little window of pathway recognition from a governing body, because they don't see everything. They're quite narrow. Their vision's quite narrow because they're focused on very specific things. But for us, now that we've got a facility going to be, you know, pretty much laid on the ground in the next couple of months in Linlithgow, we're now going to use that as our place where anyone can come and access what we're doing as a team. They can become part of that team, creating that hotbed, creating that community, all based off of what this team's trying to do. And it kind of worked reverse. It was reverse kind of created and engineered, because the whole idea was to do it off the back of the circuit and then build into a team. But we created the team and now we're just going to reverse engineer it. And basically what we're trying to do now is lift and create that that mindset regarding, well, why can't we? We're fortunate enough that we've got local riders like Cameron Mason, who has went from being the local club kid at like 10 years old to being one of the best cyclocross riders in the world on his day and riding for Trinity. He's in the right place. He's a really, really approachable kid. And having people run about that, we had him at our training camp at the weekend in the Costa del Danun, and it was really cool for them to actually just see him and talk to him and realise he's just like me. And that for me is the biggest difference that we're seeing now. There's way more, it's way more realistic for them to actually understand that it is a viable path. But our job is also to explain them what that pathway looks like and help them get an idea in their mind's eye of what they think it looks like. And then we'll pick it apart and say, well, if you do this part then and then do that bit there, and you try and do this amount of training when you're this age, and we expose you to bit racing in Europe, well, you're on the right path. And from that point of view, it's really about just creating a very obvious, almost in-your-face pathway for them that they can actually be professional bike riders. And it's not necessarily got to just be about them coming into the sport. It's also the exit points as well. Where are those exit points for these young athletes?
The Tour des Courses is sponsored by Super Sapiens. You can use Super Sapiens data to find out the foods that work best for you, when to fuel for optimum performance, and how to keep the dreaded bonk at bay. Real-time glucose data at your fingertips means no more guesswork on fueling.
Last night as I lay sleeping, there came a dream to me. I was in the stand at Hampden Park, the fifth ball for TC. And as I gazed upon the scene, I was absolutely sure that the European Cup was in the grub of the team from Stenhouse Muir. The European Cup was in the grub of the team from Stenhouse Muir.
Refereeing, you think?
Yeah, he was holding him back, and the young lad let him know that he was holding him back and let the play go momentarily, no advantage, brought it back.
Gave a free kick to, I assume, Stenhouse Muir in the maroon shirts. There was a junior game on at Falkirk, our first stop today as well, wasn't there? And we asked the lady who was playing, and she said it was Falkirk against Blackburn. Obviously, we thought that meant Blackburn Rovers, but it wasn't Blackburn Rovers, was it? It was Blackburn, a club from Bathgate, which we came through a couple of days ago on our way into Edinburgh. And, yeah, these fourth-generation pitches, the artificial surfaces, mean that they get a lot of use, don't they? Lots of junior teams, community teams. As somebody told us a few days ago, they also get rented out for walking football for older people. We're nearly ready for walking football, aren't we?
We're doing the bending down thing again, aren't we?
Yeah, we've been doing a bit of walking cycling this week, haven't we? But yeah, Falkirk. The Falkirk Stadium. There was a junior game on there, and then we wiggled our way back out on the cycle path past the Kelpies. Two huge horse head structures, 30 metres high, sort of rearing up out of the ground. And they have been constructed to, Kelpies are shape-shifting water spirits. And they are horse head-shaped as a monument to horse-powered heritage across Scotland. And they're impressive, aren't they?
Absolutely beautiful. Mm. Yeah, really impressive.
And that bit of cycle path on the Forth and Clyde Canal, incredible to think that that was the Forth and Clyde Canal that we were on down at Dumbarton several days ago, Tuesday in fact,
right.
So it stretches all across Scotland. And now here we are at Stenhouse Muir next to the Norway stand, and I suppose, well, this is a Norwegian Stenhouse Muir fan club founded in 1992, people after our own hearts really, because they were browsing the football results on whatever the Norwegian equivalent of teletext was. And they saw Stenhouse Muir and felt that it sounded very similar to an old Norse word. So apparently, and I'm quoting from Nutmeg, the Scottish football magazine here, Sten means stone, house means house, and Muir is open to different interpretations, but it could mean wall, it could mean bog or marsh. But either way, Stenhouse Muir was the club that spoke to the Norwegian fans, and they sponsor that stand, I guess.
There you go. Good on them. Did you remember me asking the lady? I asked the lady from Blackburn where Blackburn was, and she said, "It's in Blackburn."
That was I mean, ask a silly question, I guess.
Yeah.
Where is Blackburn? It's in Blackburn. Yeah.
You looked it up, didn't you? We now know where.
We now know.
Scottish Blackburn.
Yeah,
is.
Scottish yeah. Blackburn, Bathgate.
Good little players.
Yeah.
I wonder who they're playing. Who would play in light sky blue like that?
Oh, a goal! Oh. Nice finish. Oh, few recriminations in the defence there amongst the maroon-clad players. And the stadium, Simon, Ochil View, because the Ochil Hills are the range of hills that are between here and Stirling, where we're going. But fortunately, we don't have to go over them. The race director's taken pity on us. We have a more or less entirely pan flat route today, although the wind is up a little bit. Might be headwindy on the way up to Stirling, possibly.
How far away is that?
Stirling Albion, 18 kilometres from here. And then...
Are you being kind to me and doing the thing you did yesterday?
No, I'm telling you the truth. So it is 18 kilometres. Yeah, I played a trick on your brain, didn't I, at Kelty, when I said, what did I say? It was 15 kilometres to Dunfermline, when it was actually only about 7 or 8.
My shoulders slumped at 15, and then when we arrived in what I... Well, I just thought it was no man's land. After about 9 or 10k, I thought...
It wasn't even that.
Was it not?
No. But we came into the outskirts of Dunfermline, and I thought you must have had a little boost there, thinking, well, we're here.
Well, no, I saw what I thought was a football ground, but then my brain was telling me it can't be. It must be a mirage, or, you know. But it didn't have that sort of wobbly effect that you have if you're in the desert and you see a little lake or something.
We've got to that point, haven't we? We've started seeing football grounds everywhere. Anything that looks like a floodlight, I'm like, oh, I wonder who play there, and then it would turn out to be a lorry park.
that happened earlier. Did you get that?
Yeah.
Completely. I bet the same bit. I saw some sort of red boarding outside and what looked like a little turnstile.
I get this driving around Europe, though, covering the races. You drive down a road and you think, oh, the Tour's been down here, if you're in France, obviously, or, you know, or in Belgium. Oh, the Tour of Flanders comes along here and then it does a left up there. Or and these little moments of, I want to say deja vu, but it's not quite deja vu. And the same happens with football grounds, driving around Europe thinking, oh, so and so play here, and then you'll see the floodlights and think, oh, that's their ground.
It's nice. Well, I love the when we're pedalling along and then you get the first glimpse of the ground. I think I've already said this, but you get the first little glimpse of the ground, the stadium, or a floodlight, or some nice sort of font, the club written in a nice font, and yeah.
And there's a sort of league table of you know, what makes a good one and what makes a bad one. So we've been a little bit down on the brand new stadium, haven't we, the modern grounds, but actually I thought Falkirk was a really good example. They've displayed their badge really elegantly on the side. There's quite an imposing front and a set of offices and, you know, a big glass fronted section. Nice modern stadium, they've done it well there. But I also like the kind of slightly weather-worn, weather-beaten, peeling paint, making the best of a not a lot. And I think Stenhouse Muir here is sort of in the middle. It's got a lovely Stenhouse Muir football club along the front of the turnstile, just on the corner as we came in there. And I think that's where we should do our increasingly comfortable hug photo. I'm getting used to it.
It's the poke in the ribs I'm not so keen on. Well, I think that's 2-2, isn't it, on the old puncture stakes?
Well, 3-2 to you, because you started the Tour de Corse with a puncture. If you remember, way back, driving up to Gretna, saying, oh, I didn't notice it. I didn't notice. Trying to fix it in a car park at the services, making matters slightly worse. We dealt with that adversity very well, I felt. Considering. No?
Yeah, well, no, I mean, I was... The point of me switching on the recorder there was to sort of smugly say, that's too all, but you've... you've battered me down pretty well there.
This tyre was brand new, but it looks like it's done a season now, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's got flat bits in the middle bit.
I mean, it's we've put it through. Yeah, look, it's tread's completely gone there. We have pushed it a bit on the road surface in places, quite gravelly over the last couple of days. But that was a little piece of glass come out the tube. Out of the tyre. So I'm now just doing the thing that I do obsessively.
Very good, yeah.
Check the inside of the tyre, make sure nothing's poking through, just look. And it was slightly on the side, which is where they tend to go.
We could see Stirling's majestic castle for miles away as we approached the city, skirting past Bannockburn, scene of one of Scotland's finest victories over the English. King Edward II of England's huge army of 25,000 soldiers invaded Scotland in June 1314, but Robert the Bruce's army, which was a quarter of the size, defeated them. It was part of the First War of Scottish Independence, but the Scots would have to wait another 14 years for the final victory over the English.
That was a pleasant bit, wasn't it, Simon?
It was nice, yeah. I had a bit of an emotional moment watching you. We were on a little farm track. You went round a corner quite a bit in front of me, if I'm honest. That was the only annoying part about it. But then you were cruising along and there was Stirling Castle behind you and then snowy peaks beyond that. It was, yeah, absolutely lovely.
Yeah, lovely ride that from Stenhouse Muir to Stirling. And here we are, Stirling Albion. And the mountains in the background. And our penultimate stop. Before, well, next stop, Alloa, and that's the end of this section of the Tour de Cosse.
We've got a little culinary treat at Alloa, haven't we?
Well, hopefully. Alan Patullo sent me a message early in the week saying, if you do make it to Alloa Athletic, do try the pie in a roll. Meat pie in a bread roll.
I'm up for trying.
I think, well, we're both feeling a little hollow, aren't we? I've made the ridiculous mistake of thinking that because it's only 55k, and I'm paying the price, and I'm kicking myself because I've got plenty of stuff, plenty of science in sport. I've had an emergency tiramisu bake, but just hitting myself on the head for not following the rule of 20 minutes,
Didn't carb it last night either.
We didn't have any carbs last night. We did have a very, very nice steak though, didn't we?
It was nice.
It was nice, yeah. And that feels like it's repaired my legs a bit. But, it's such a... And you know, I was riding along there feeling the energy tank, the needle just ticking down quicker than it perhaps needs to. And just, it's such an easy mistake to make. It's just got to keep eating and drinking calories, otherwise the energy is just slipping out of you, especially when it's cold. And it sounds so... I mean, Lizzie is a pro rider, and it sounds like the simplest tip in the world, but it's so true, especially on the ninth day. Pay for mistakes made 48 hours ago, basically. But I think I've got it more or less right all through the week, but just today, made the mistake of thinking it's relatively short, so we don't need to eat anything. I've left plenty of room for a pie in a roll.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton. Cycling podcast, team car at the back of the pack, please.
That's Seb Piquet, the voice of Radio Tour, to remind me to tell you that the whole Tour de Corse series is sponsored by the Hammerhead Carew 2, which has got us as far as Alloa without a hitch, and now it's time for me to get the laptop back out and start plotting the routes for the second portion of the tour, which will take us all the way from Bonnyrigg up to Dingwall and the home of Ross County Football Club. There's an awful lot more Scotland to explore beyond Dingwall as well. And if you want to go cycling on roads that are unfamiliar to you, I can really recommend the Carew 2's mapping, turn-by-turn directions, and the yellow line, which keeps you on track at all points. If you'd like to buy a Carew 2, you can do so at hammerhead.io, and at the moment you can get a free heart rate monitor with every purchase with the promo code CYCLE. Go to hammerhead.io, put the heart rate monitor and the Carew 2 into your shopping cart, and then use the promo code CYCLE to get the heart rate monitor for free.
Science in sport, not just the fuel of athletes, but the fuel of champions. From Filippo Ganna to Ethan Hayter, and now Lionel Burney and Simon Gill. The 2022 Tour de Corse champions, admittedly champions by default. Their ride is fueled by science in sport. Their bottles filled to the brim with beta fuel. Their cafe breaks boosted by energy bakes. Get 25% off at scienceinsport.com with the code SISCP25.
Alloa Athletic number 1, PJ Morrison. Number 2, Scott Taggart. Number 4, Craig Howie. Number 5, Andy Graham. Number 6, Mark Dernan. Number 8, John Robertson. Number 15, Ross McIver. Number 11, Stephen Boyd. Number 12, Stefan Skugel. Number 18, Connor Salmon. And number 22, Ewan Henderson. Alloa substitutes for today. Number 31, David Hutton. Number 17, Jordan Armstrong. Number 3, Daniel Church. Number 20, Cameron O'Donnell. Number 19, Mohamed Niang. Number 16, Adam King. Number 28, Blaise Riley Snow. And number 9, Ben Armour. The match officials for today, referee is Chris Fordyce. He's assisted by David McNiff and Paul McVineau.
Oh, Alloa Athletic FC, love them already. Black and yellow, the nickname the Wasps, Watford are the Hornets. It's like it was meant to be, Simon. We'll be firmly supporting Alloa this afternoon, I think, won't we? And that's it, stage 9 completed. 9 days on the road, 750 kilometres, 30, yeah.
That was the total. That's a lot, isn't it?
It's a fair amount. Yeah. 35 hours in the saddle, 26 Scottish League grounds done. So what does that leave us still to do? 16.
Good
Is
math.
That right?
Good maths.
I was struggling there.
42 minus 20. I can't remember what you said now. Oh dear.
There's some more
pie,
to do.
Lionel. We need a pie.
We need a pie and a roll. Yeah. Oh, amazing.
The sun's come out, hasn't it? Look at the blossom on the tree there.
Yeah.
Fitting. And I know...
When you get in the ground...
There's a view behind
you. There is a view. Yeah. The hills there.
Yeah.
And we're in Clackmannanshire, I think this is, isn't it? Mm. And what a sensational week.
Yeah, very well done. Superb route planning. You know, you've had a tough old week, and you've kept it together really well. And it's, yeah, hats off. You're strong on the bike, strong in the mind.
And haven't felt so strong in the mind all week, I must admit. But there's been some low moments and some nice moments. And yeah, I suppose I regret nothing about the week at all, other than that I can't talk to Richard about it and just have him tell me where I went wrong and all the things that I didn't know about the places we went through. And, you know, oh, did you go here? Oh, you should have gone there. You know, his local knowledge would have been invaluable, wouldn't it? But the second half, well, the first half that we've just done, because football, we know, is a game of two halves, Simon. Did you know that?
Well, according to St. Greavesy, which we grew up with.
It's a game of two halves. Uneven halves in this case, because I don't think it will take 9 days to do the rest of the grounds in the northern part of Scotland. Of course, only goes as far as Dingwall, and there's an awful lot more Scotland after that, isn't there? But we're this has been a very private week, really. The intention was that we would let people follow our incredibly slow-moving dot. but we've kept it quiet because I think we both wanted some quiet time to reflect. And just, it's been fantastic having you here, Simon, because we've been able to talk about Richard a lot, but then ride in comfortable silence at other times. This trip has been all-consuming, hasn't it? The riding, the planning, the recording, thinking ahead, trying to think one step ahead all the time. And I think it's helped me in some ways, but it's just postponed having to confront the enormous void that I know I'm going to feel when I get home. So there we go. We've completed what we set out to do, and even in ordinary circumstances, I don't think that was a given. So I feel really proud of ourselves that we've done it. And we couldn't have done it without Sam Slatter, who's been fantastic all week. He's still taking pictures of us, Simon. Still taking pictures. What have you made of it all, Sam?
Oh, it's been incredible, hasn't it? I was just thinking about how it's so urban, and then we've had so much countryside at the same time. And Alloa is a perfect mix of both, because we saw snowy mountain peaks, big high rolling mountains behind us, and then you're back in the urbanness of Alloa. So yeah, it's been a lovely blend of all of it, and all of it's been great. Yeah,
well, thanks very much for all your support. You've been exactly what I hoped you'd be, driving the team bus, fixing the punctures, just keeping our spirits up. And you know, you never met Richard. I know you've listened to some of the cycling podcast, but it's been helpful having you here, because it's been a nice break from the overwhelmingly sad thoughts that we've been having. So I think the little trio we've created this week has worked really well, and I'm really glad. I think you've got a future ahead of you as a professional cycling photographer. So as I said to you the other night, if you ever want to go to a race with Simon and take some pictures of the pros, I mean, they do move a bit quicker than us.
Yeah.
So you've got to get your eye in a bit
quicker
than Simon anyway. Yeah. Yeah, you can say that now we've finished.
Yeah.
I think it's time for an Alloa pie in a roll and a game of football. Alloa Athletic against Clyde. And then back to Edinburgh.
Come on, you wasps.
Hiya. One, please. Thank you very much. Well, have you seen a black and gold pie? Pie, black pudding and beans. I don't know. I don't know whether that goes on a roll or not. Oh. On a roll.
Do we have sauce in any of them?
Sauce? Any sauce?
Brown sauce.
That's traditional.
Yeah.
Brown on all of them. Brown on all three, then, please. We're all together.
Three weirdos here are together.
Sorry, can I just have a... Right, you don't take card, do you? Right. It's just 2 quid. Yeah, I'll just take card.
That's all for stage 9. It feels like the end of the road, but as we've said, actually it's only half time, and we'll resume the journey in Bonnie Rig in the next episode. The Tour de Coste was recorded by me, Lionel Burning, and Simon Gill. The series was produced by Tom Wally. Sam Slatter, the driver of our faithful broom wagon and so much more, does leave us at this point though, and I'd like to say a big thank you to Sam for his patience, support and good humour over the first part of our journey. Hopefully he'll join us on the road for another adventure in the future, perhaps next time on two wheels rather than on four.
Scottish League Premier Division, Aberdeen 2, Kilmarnock 0. Celtic 5, Morton 1. And the United against Motherwell, evening kick-off at 7:30. Hibernian 0, Rangers 0. St Mirren 0, Dundee 0.
The Cycling Podcast was created in 2013 by Richard Moore, Daniel Freeb and Lionel Burney.
I've been meaning to tell you this for a while, actually, but I was asked not to tell you, but I think now's the time. I'm sure you know of Catherine Moore, the former GCN gravel presenter. Anyway, she had two cats that I think adopted her, two lovely, beautiful tabbies. And she didn't know what to call them. And one of her friends, or the person she was living with at the time, a huge, huge cycling podcast fan, so called them Lionel and Richard. And later found out that they were both girls. Richard actually went missing. So now she only has Lionel. But Lionel is a lady, but she's still called Lionel. Really beautiful tabby cat, tabby lady called Lionel.